think we should do everything to prevent it, really. I don't want another wave. I don't want this to continue. I don't want another wave. And we don't have to have another wave. But we have to accept, like what you said at the beginning of the show, we just have to accept reality and act accordingly.
Forgotten Corner podcast would not exist without our listeners. If you enjoy the work we are doing on this show and would like to support further, please consider a donation through our Patreon account, patreon.com/forgottencornerpod, or visit our website, forgottencornerpod.com. Welcome back to the Forgotten Corner podcast. We acknowledge that the Forgotten Corner occupies unceded Indigenous land. We acknowledge that the Blackfoot Confederacy never surrendered its land in the signing of Treaty 7, but agreed to share it. The Forgotten Corner sits on Treaty 7 and Treaty 4 territory, traditional lands of the Siksika, Kainai, Piikani, Stony Nakota, and Tsuut'ina, as well as the Cree, Sioux, and the Soto brands of the Ojibwa peoples. We also honor and acknowledge that we are on Métis Nation within Region 3. The Forgotten Corner is a proud member of the Harbinger Media Network, and if you'd like to check out other podcasts like this from across the country, click the link that we will provide in our show notes. My name is Scott Schmidt. I'm here alongside my always co-host and always good friend, Mr. Jeremy Appel. How are you from Calgary this morning, my friend?
I'm doing all right. Pretty boring. Stuff. You know, I'm still not on Twitter. So Scott was telling me about some, when we were off pod, about some Twitter fight he got in. And I was just, it's like when the
It wasn't a Twitter fight. Like, this is the thing. It wasn't a fight. It was like somebody was antagonistic over what was
obviously being assaulted on Twitter.
No, I don't. I think we're from different like generations where everything is like bullying or not bullying, but like, that's not how I, this is just a person who did not understand a very obvious, like the every very obvious implication behind something. And then decided to tell me how much I need to read law books and shit, and then got all upset. And I was like, okay, well, you don't get what I'm saying. Good luck with that winning personality. Anyways, I just think people are going, this is all about the Kyle Rittenhouse thing, right? And this was the verdict yesterday. And obviously it's a ridiculous verdict. And if any, I don't think we have anyone that listens to this show that would argue otherwise. And if you do, go fuck yourself. Sorry.
But, I don't know. We may have some weird libertarian.
Yeah. I mean, if you like, again, seriously, if you think that like, this was like a just, this is a just thing, then seriously go fuck yourself. I mean that. Like in every
stop
way.
Listening to our podcast.
Yeah, I don't care if you do or don't, but like seriously, with
you can't be helped.
Yeah, I mean, like we talked about before, I think like the what's really disgusting about this whole thing is like he may very well have been like quote unquote not guilty under the goddamn laws that exist in Wisconsin, like the whole idea. But like there, I've seen people like a friend on Lori's Facebook was saying like how this guy was just trying to do good, and then like this went bad, and he was just dealing with the situation that he was put in, like quote unquote,
that he drove across state lines.
What the fuck are you talking about? You mean the one where he got in a car, drove across to a new state, armed himself with military grade weapons and went into a situation? Is that the situation he was just dealing with because he was put in? Like, fuck you.
Well, exactly. Oh, in so like mad. In like a normal, healthy society, if you have a gun and someone pulls a gun on you and you shoot them, like that's on you. Right? Like why do you need to shoot them? You both have guns. He had a bigger gun than the guy who testified.
I mean, I think only one guy had a gun.
Right. The guy he didn't kill had a gun.
Right. Like, I don't know. I mean, again, like it's not
I think one of the guys hit him with a skateboard, but it's
if you sit there and argue about the actual outcome of the verdict, like it, like these are the things that matter. It doesn't, it doesn't broaden out to what the real problem is. That situation does not, it just shouldn't, it shouldn't exist. But of course, my comment was that, like, white, basically I was implying that white people get away with murder in Canada, which is so fucking true. And this person was like, but it's not legal. And I was like, okay, like, you're right. Yeah. It never happens, I guess. But that's not, that's the legal point I was making.
That's that. True. Murder is not legal in Canada.
Yeah, you're right. Like, think, you win, man. Yeah, you're right. The law of the state, you cannot shoot people. Gotcha.
Yeah. So, and anyway, we know that the law applies equally to everyone all the
that's
time.
That's right. That's right. But anyways,
in Canada, not in the US. No, I'm that was definitely one of those moments where I'm like, I'm glad I'm taking the social media cleanse, because like reading about it is like in the NPR and like Washington Post was like infuriating enough. But having to be on Twitter and seeing people's like annoying,
it wasn't so bad, but it was just like, I don't know. I just don't engage.
Would set me off.
Yeah. I try not to engage with people. Like,
well, that's what I'm hoping to do with this hiatus, is to come back to social media
and not talk to people. That's the
have a healthier relationship with it. When I see things getting me mad, just like log off for a bit, you know?
Yeah.
It is definitely a valuable tool for journalistic purposes.
You should really try just like muting almost everyone, and then like almost, and then just never talking to people. It's fantastic. But anyway, I digress, because this is not what
I think there's a plug-in. Sorry. Our guest is waiting very patiently.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think there's a plug-in you can get that just like eliminates your feed. So you can just post and you get notifications about your post, and you can go to people's like specific accounts to read what they have to say, but you'll get lost in like the feed, which seems kind of neat.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't spend much time on my newsfeed anyways, but it's Twitter's a, I like it, but it's also fucked up. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about today. In fact, it's kind of the opposite of what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about something else that's fucked up.
We're here to talk about real life.
Well, yeah. And so, obviously in the last year, we've spent quite a bit of this show talking about, what's it called again? Oh yeah. COVID. I think most of our listeners have heard of it by now, and some of you may even be sick of hearing about it or sick of talking about it. And I think we're all sick of having to live in a world where it exists. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean that we can just pretend reality isn't reality. And one of my fucking biggest pet peeves in this world is the level at which we ignore reality to just because like it's inconvenient to like whatever, and that's not the case. And so here we are, COVID's fourth wave, which was absolutely devastating, is over, so to speak. We're coming down into this valley of few cases compared to the peaks that we were at, and we want to talk about where we might go from here and what we can expect, because I think Albertans need to have a handle on the reality of what to expect, not just what we hope happens, because for 24 months we've been taught, or 20 months now we've been taught, that that doesn't work. And so we would like to very much welcome back to our show, officially now our most had, like our number one quantity appearance guest, I think. Like, what
is this, number four?
I think it's her third.
One for each wave.
One for each wave. Yes. Yeah.
No, I think I think we first had you on after the second wave.
We after had the we, second was the first.
Yeah.
Time.
So because I remember you're like, there's gonna be a third wave. And
so well, yes. Like, so
yeah, you're probably right. But I don't want to think about it.
Dr. Gosha Gasparovich is back with us again today for the third time. She was here with us in February. She was here with us again, I believe, either at the end of April or early May. Both times we were dealing with the province, basically had just announced that they were going to reopen. Both times that went all to shit. Here we are again. We have not done that this time specifically, but we do want to talk to Gosha this morning and hear a little bit about what we can expect as Albertans with holiday season coming up, winter coming up, yada yada yada. Dr. Gasparovitz, thank you for being with us. Welcome back to the Forgotten Corner.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's always nice to talk with you, although it's always in the scary moment when one can see the future already and everybody else is drinking the drinks with umbrellas in them. And yeah.
Well, I was hoping maybe that today would be like at least a smidgen more positive than the last times we've had you, because, and I think this is, I don't want to say, I might use the word funny when I talk about this stuff, but I mean that not in a ha-ha way, but in sort of a Jesus. But when we had you last, maybe we should start here. The plan was that we needed to be at a 70% vaccination rate, right, in order to be able to reopen. And we already have discussed ad nauseum about the fact that that's wrong. But just this last week, 5-6 months later, we are now officially at the 70.2% full Albertan, like the total population vaccination rate. We have not made an announcement as in a province yet that we are going to be lifting the minor restrictions that we have as we have them, such as the restrictions exemption program, vaccine passport, and the mask wearing. And I'm not sure what else there is.
There are some gathering limits.
We have a few little, okay. So where are we? Like, is this a good place or are we? Cases are down from where they were in September. Like, well, how do you view where we are right now? It's the beginning of November, middle of November.
So cases are down from where they were. So that means, so we have new variant, we have Delta, right? That we didn't have in spring. So in spring, we had just several cases of it and it was growing. And we could predict that there will be fourth wave when, if we let it grow. But now we have Delta, so 70% vaccination is definitely not enough to stop it by itself. Even 90% vaccination is not enough to stop it by just by itself. Okay, we went down from the top of the fourth wave, which means, which is actually awesome. That means that Delta is not the end of the world, that Delta can be still beaten, that we can go down quite sharply. It was like, our R value was above 0.8 a little bit. So that means elimination is still possible, because if we can go from 2000 cases to 200, that means we can go from 200 to 20, from 20 to 2, and from 2 to 0, basically. That's a good thing. And we went down even without shutdown of any sort, right? Just vaccination, getting boosters to some people already, or third shots, however one calls it.
Those are the same thing, right?
Yes, third shot, the booster.
Technically, it's the same thing, but then starts to be this semantic debate, like.
Right, because I think, like, I remember reading somewhere that they're distinct and explaining why, and it making no sense to me.
Yeah, so I think now people are pulling it off who want to muddle it. Like, for example, if you say, we need third shots as fast as possible to everybody. And then it's like, oh no, but it's a booster and not third shot. And then the discussion goes, whether it's booster or third shot. And you're not anymore on the topic that we should give whatever it is as fast as possible to all eligible people. So that's why I don't want to digress too much, whether, I mean, it is a different, like, basically third shot would say more that, okay, for vaccine to work, we have to have it. otherwise it's incomplete. And booster is
right. Like, oh, so booster is like you're giving it a boot. I totally understand. And this is the thing, like, I hate that this is where we're at, that people will take that semantic argument and be like, well, what is it like? You need two, do you need 10? Like, what is it? It's like, no, man, you're like, stay. It's also, we could have a whole other conversation about how it's not really fair that Canadians and Americans and rich countries are at booster shot stage when so much of the world is still unvaccinated. But that being said, you can't have enough layers of protection. I mean, like, Jesus Christ, like, it's not that hard to understand. Like, armor is armor. The more you have, the better, right?
Yet you still can hear this brutal argument saying, oh, and sometimes it's officers of health using this. It's, oh, it's just one tool. It cannot solve it all. That's why let's not use it. Like, come on.
And we agree that it is just one tool, right? Like, this Absolutely. Is the point.
But the conclusion is that's why you should use it as much as you can.
Yeah.
And not, that's why.
Just like, not, you can't, not you're not masks. Going to a limp. This is the thing. People are always like, well, The one tool argument is always used in an argument to not use that tool. It's the same thing with harm reduction. We've had
that fluoride,
right?
In,
like
in the water supply.
100%. I mean, this is just typical bullshit roundabout ways to argue against something. And it's like, if you're building a house and you need 20 tools, you're not going to throw six of them out and just hope that you find a way. Like, it's this is how they work. Now, I want to talk about R value because you mentioned that before. And I know I had the number with that. It's on the website right now. The Alberta's website was province wide from November 1st and November 14th is 0.92 province wide. Varies a little bit up or down. Calgary's flat on one. Rest of Alberta is 0.87. But my question is that you mentioned a few minutes ago, something around 0.8. I'm wondering, is that 0.92, because that's a good number, it's below one, but is that higher than it was the last time they had read that? Like, had it gone lower than that at some point? Because before we started recording, you and I had I had mentioned, like, I can really tell, like, here in Medicine Hat, we have been in the 60s for active cases for a week or maybe a little bit more. It's very, you know, 62, 64, 63, 64, 62. And every day is like four new, four recovered, right? Essentially, it has a very much like a Medicine Hat's R value is one to me, right? My question, I guess, is like, is that a thing we're seeing across the province right now where that initial like super sort of fall that we had in cases is now plateauing around the sort of 5,500 average active cases province-wide mark?
Yeah, it's plateauing. And that's the... So, okay, so with R value, the higher it is above one, the faster the higher the growth rate of exponential growth. So doubling time is shorter then. If it's below one, it's good in the sense that we are not anymore growing, the cases are going down, but the safe area is below 0.8. So just being below one is not good enough because it's very unstable. You have just several super spreading events and it bumps you above one and then the spread continues. And especially if we are in high values, like 300 to 400 daily new cases, being just below one, that means 300 to 400 people are infected every day. And knowing about long COVID, that up to 30% adults can have long COVID, then calculate from 300, it's 90 people. So 90 people daily will deal with long-term consequences of it. It's not fun and it's not acceptable. So this kind of... like relief sensation when we plateau, when we went down from the wave, but it's still 300 to 400 people getting infected.
Can I do like the provincial position devil's advocate question here? Because I guess if I'm the they haven't lifted any restrictions of any kind. So we had the vaccines climbing, and then we put the passport plan in place, and we had some more rules about, and that brought our R value down below one, and then we kept it like that. My confusion is what have we done to make a mistake here? Like, aren't we doing the right thing? We're not lifting anything. We're going down.
Yeah. So the thing that we are not at 0.8 anymore, but it's a little bit higher, that means that something is growing under, you know, like, so.
Is that this Delta variant I've heard about?
I don't know. I don't see the reports of sequencing in Alberta. So I don't know what's going under. I don't know what kinds of variants we can have and how they are growing. But it doesn't have to be new variant. It can be new outbreaks, new chains of transmission going on and going up. So some go down and some go up. And as a summary, you know, like wave going down and under it wave going up. And then you have the sort of a plateau for some time when you add two
so
waves.
Like, we've talked about this in the past, and I think what you're saying is, like, because COVID's spread isn't always exactly what the R value is, sometimes you'll be in a place where one person will give it to 20, where some place others won't give it to many. So as what much as we saw this decline, we can have other spikes because of, you know, I don't know.
We can have because of super
sporting events and what have you.
Yeah, and so R value is just an average of many things that are happening. But anyway, the fact that R value went up from around 0.8 to now above 0.9 is not good. So, and we didn't change the measures, the official measures, but that means that, okay, we have colder weather, more people inside. So that's the opposite what we had in summer. So in summer, R value in some moment went down without any new measures or didn't go up when it was expected to go up so much, because we had warmer weather, because we closed in-person schools, so there were holidays. So then the weather was working into our advantage against the virus. And now the weather is working the other way around, right?
So
the same measures in worse weather would work worse, not as good, not as efficient. And the other thing I think is that just after the when we are, it's what, how people react to things. So when we are almost at the tip of the wave, like when we are super fast growing up and ICUs are being overwhelmed, then there is this overall, not panic, but like screaming that something is going really, really bad. And then people reduce their contacts and behave more like it's making like voluntary shutdown. But once we are down in the wave, people have the impression that, okay, now it's all good. ICUs are not overwhelmed anymore as much as they were. So we are good to meet more and be less cautious and so on. So then the cases are increasing, right? So, and then, yeah, so to avoid, okay, once more about R value. Just being between 0.8 and 1 is not good enough. So, and especially
0. Especially if it's higher this week than it was last week, basically, right?
Yes.
Like, we're not going, it doesn't matter if we're still below 1 if we're trending back up.
And especially this, this region 0.9 to 1, it's not safe. So basically to have continuous R value, low R value, we should be below 0.8. And if we would be below 0.6, then very quickly we can eliminate, we can stop all the community transmissions.
Do you think that the introduction of vaccines for the 5 to 11-year-olds that Alberta said yesterday, Friday, I hate when we do this to our listeners, but that this is on the 19th, Friday the 19th, the announcement was made by Health Canada that 5 to 11-year-old shots for free. We all know this. Could that help? that, I mean, surely that will help. Is that something that modeling might suggest? If obviously it depends on the behavior of the people who are eligible, whether they get it or don't get it. But assuming that there's a huge rush of parents taking their 5 to 11-year-olds next week to get shots, could that bring it back below 0.8?
I think that might help tremendously, because now 5 to 11 are the main drivers of the spread in Alberta. So this age group, so elementary school kids, have the highest incidence rate among all other age groups. And it started in September after the in-person.
Which makes sense, since zero people are vaccinated in that group and they're all at school inside, hanging out.
Yes, zero vaccinated and at school, because the group of 0 to 4 years old, so those people don't have such high incidence rate.
They're not, most of them are at home, or a lot of them, right?
Yeah.
Zero to two, you're at home, most likely. Like, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Certainly not around 35 kids or 1,000 kids, depending on where you are.
Many hours a day in well-ventilated spaces, not wearing proper masks. Yeah, that's...
Are you encouraged at least by the fact that we haven't seen an announcement yet of a lifting of restriction date, or like Ontario is already trying to roll out a plan for lifting their vaccine passport system? We actually haven't done that in Alberta, and we're not
Ontario.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
Ontario backtracked on that pretty quick.
Oh, did they? Okay, sorry. That's good to know.
It was, well, I mean, basically they had this plan, and then they're like, and then cases were going up, and they're like, okay, well, it's delayed indefinitely. So they're supposed to get rid of vaccine passports.
January 18th, it was January to March, right? We looked it up.
Yeah.
And we were all right. It was like a plan, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So they would start lifting it at certain places in January, and then by March, just no vaccine passports. And then they're like, yeah, okay, we're not.
But they've backed. Okay, right, so now. I'll stop using that as an example. Thank you, Jeremy. But you are encouraged, at least I hope, by the fact that we haven't had that announcement yet. Do you sort of wake up every day just with hope that it's another day they don't?
Oh yeah, no, I'm super happy that they are not announcing any loosening of measures. That's really like, oh, maybe people can learn. Like, but it's
eventually.
Because it's minimum what we can do, not relax the measures, the small measures that we have, and then we can do so much more. So now we are in this risky area, and it's really risky. So like when you look at Europe, how much the cases are shooting up there, and like Austria from Monday will start to be in a lockdown. Austria went from being on a flat level almost immediately to doubling every 14 days. So it was just quick shift, and then they are on this, I think it was October 14th that they started to be on this up fast trajectory. And once you are on this trajectory, it's really difficult. Like you have to put strong measures to bend the curve. So like not getting onto this trajectory is really important. And the best way not to get there is get R value below 0.8. But just this oscillating at 0.9, 1, 1.1, this is really dangerous because it can flip up anytime. So what we can do, not relaxing the measures that we have now, but okay, we have colder weather, so people will be more inside and so on and so on. So the super important thing is acknowledging airborne transmission, the consequences of airborne transmission, and using airborne precautions measures everywhere. And last week, not the previous week, Dr. Teresa Tam, Chief Medical Officer of Health of Canada, said loud and clearly that COVID is transmitted by aerosols, that can linger in the air for many hours, and that can be inhaled and then exhaled and produced and so on. So people can get infected through the inhaled air, which technically means that COVID is airborne. And for airborne pathogen, one needs airborne precautions. So not surgical masks, but N95 quality grade respirators. So we have mask mandates and it's great, but basically we should like throw away our cotton masks and replace them with N95 respirators. And N95 respirators are not necessarily those, you know, like eggshells, hard ones, but there is a lot of the soft ones produced that don't need fit testing, that just you can fit test basically by yourself, knowing if you are breathing through the mask or around the mask.
Yeah, those are the ones that you sort of like open, right, and put over.
Yeah, but we are
right
just
there. I wish we were on YouTube right now, but
yeah. I was gonna say, sorry listeners, you can't.
So those are the ones that look like coffee filters.
Yeah,
right? And yeah,
yeah.
And they are awesome. And some of them like made Layfield, Canada. I'm just looking at my mask. So this is my favorite one, actually. That
where did you get them? Because there's a supply issue here with these things. And did we not announce early on in this thing? I know we certainly didn't announce what we were going to make vaccines domestically, but we did. I thought we did say we were going to start making the masks, but
we have like plenty of masks domestically. There's several very, very good manufacturers in Canada. I don't know why they are not broadly advertised by every public health official and every like.
Because I was actually going to ask you about that today. Because I very much did read something this last week that was like, listen, the N95 and the KN95 or whatever were like the Euro, like they are the musts, like any, like even, like I think it was the N95 is better than the KN95, I can't remember, one's better than the other, whichever was the lesser was being said, like this is the least you should be doing, and that cloth and the typical disposable ones that we have are basically trash with these variants.
Yeah, so surgical, like it's better to wear the cloth mask or surgical mask than not to wear a mask, but you should wear N95s, great, or right, elastomeric respirators, basically respirators, not masks. So this N95 and upgrade are called respirators. So those are that protect from airborne pathogens. The surgical ones are not designed to protect from airborne pathogens. They are designed to protect from splashes, basically.
But let's be clear here, though, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but if all you have is your cloth mask, still wear that fucking thing. Like that, yes, that is absolutely still better than nothing. Like if you think of this as far as like a weather is concerned and you're trying to protect yourself from the weather elements, if you went outside at minus 30, you're going to die. It's going to suck if you're wearing a t-shirt and shorts, but it's still better than being buck naked.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Like it's going to suck, but it's still better. So the point is that if don't listen to what Gosha says and say, oh, well, I don't need to wear my mask unless I have the N95. Not. Right. Because that's how some people listen to this shit. Right. Because I've had people like, some of the anti-mask crowd, when they want to like troll on my Twitter or whatever, be like, ah, that's a cloth mask or whatever I had in my profile shot. It's like, well, 100%. Like no one says that if you wear, no, I don't think anyone said if you wear a cloth mask, you'll never get COVID, but it's a layer of protection.
It's a layer of protection.
The good doctor here today is just telling you folks that the N95 is your best layer of protection. And that's where we should be going. Now that we A, know it's airborne for sure, and B, have stronger variants out there.
And if you don't have access to N95s or money to buy it, then use the brace for, okay, I don't know where to order. You have to Google it then. But an elastic brace that you can put around the, on top of your surgical mask that makes it stick to your face better. So it seals the holes around it. So that's the solution to make it better.
I mean, I guess not. It doesn't need to. I was going to say it needs to be airtight, but obviously not airtight.
Well, no, but I mean, there's air coming through the filters, but you shouldn't. All the air that comes into your mouth needs to come through the filter of the mask. It shouldn't be seeping in through the edges.
Yeah. For those listening, do not.
Or
make your mask airtight.
Right. Or the folks. That's right. Yeah. They paint duct tape over the whole. Actually, some of you anti-mask folks should just make your masks airtight. No doubt about it.
Chris Sky.
That's right. Somebody give that guy an airtight mask.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, Rosa. You haven't spoken in forever, Jeremy. Go ahead.
Well, no, Gosho is talking, so I'll ask.
I still wanted to finish about this N95 and higher grade respirator.
Yeah, please.
That we have producers in Canada, so one place you can order it from is Canada Strong. Then Vitacore from Vancouver produces as well, very good ones. Actually, KAN99. So that's the thing that filters 99% of particles. And they're
even better than the 95s?
Yes, 99s are better than 95s.
See, this is how dumb I was. I had no idea that the 95 meant like 95% of particles or whatever. I honestly didn't.
I didn't know that either.
I just knew that that's what they said. N95 was better. And I always just was like, I'm not going to ask questions. Just listen to the experts.
So how many what percentage of particles does like your regular like surgical mask?
I don't know.
Eliminate
your cloth masks and eight
years about it.
Yeah, like
so.
But
Connor Ruzicki, he's an aerosol engineer.
We actually need to get Connor on the show. I like that guy. Awesome. Connor, if you're listening, which you're probably not, but if you are, come on the show.
Gosha, I wanted to ask you because last time we had you on, we didn't have vaccine passports, which we do now, at least in Calgary. You can't you have to exempt yourself from restrictions and impose a
that's everywhere here, all of Alberta.
Oh, did Medicine Hat pass a bylaw?
It's a it's an automatic, like it's a province-wide system.
No, but you have the option, like
you can operate at lower capacity. Some of the city facilities are doing that because they don't really ever fill up anyway, and they don't wanna. I don't know how it works, but
right. But in what I'm saying is, in Calgary, you don't have a choice. They passed the bylaw that
I'm gonna look this up for the show notes. I actually think maybe I might be behind. I think we might have actually done that. But I'll figure it out.
But in any event, we have those now. We didn't before. My sense, as someone who's, you know, not at all an expert in these things, is that vaccine passports allow us to get back to some semblance of normalcy. Even while COVID is, you know, here for the long haul. Is that sustainable?
I don't think so. And I think that also I don't like the phrase COVID is here for a long haul, because
I'm sorry.
No, it's fatalistic in some way. No, it's okay. It's okay because everybody says it. But I think it's up to us if we have COVID here or not. So if we decide not to have COVID, we won't have COVID. So we can eliminate it in just 5 to 8 weeks now in Alberta, if we want, and protect the borders protect us from importation of new cases from the travel.
But we won't do that.
The most difficult part. But we definitely can live without COVID. And vaccine passports are really good in a way when you have already a certain level of activity to just allow people who are vaccinated to go to theaters and so on. But I think until we until we stop community transmission, maybe we shouldn't go to theaters. Like, stop going to theaters for this 5 to 8 weeks, and then everybody can go to theaters because there's no COVID. So,
but they're not going to do that. That's the problem, right? Like, they're not going to do that. And yes. So what is our choice if you are vaccinated and maybe not us personally, but just someone listening that's vaccinated, maybe even got a booster, and they're like, listen, they're not going to do the thing that we should do, COVID zero.
Mm-hmm. Then
I want to go to the goddamn keg. You know, that's the way they're thinking. Like, what do we, why should they continue to have to be the ones that make the choice to stay home when it's clear that we are going to live with COVID for the long haul, whether it sucks to say or not? That's literally the decision we made time and time again, and we're going to make it again. I hate that we are, but we are.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I'm not going to the keg, definitely.
Okay, that's a shitty...
not because of the keg, but
no, I know.
I just wouldn't go to restaurant now, honestly. It's right. Spreading through aerosols. It doesn't matter that I'm sitting with my family at the table. If somebody was in the... If the room is not well ventilated, and more often than not, it's not well ventilated, if there were people infected in this room before me and they talked and laughed and breathing there, then it is in aerosols there and I can get infected. So I don't want to get infected. That's it. I'm double vaxxed, but it was in late June. So probably I'm still probably well protected against severe outcomes, but I can still get infected.
So do you really think that being vaxxed twice has a expiry date?
Not full expiry date, but it gets, so with time, your immunity wanes. So anytime longer than 4 months, you are not anymore that as safe as you've been closer to 4 months from being vaccinated. But the good thing is that another dose or third dose can boost your immunity, not just to the level on average, not just to the level you've been after the second shot, but higher. So basically each next dose, like second and or third, gives you higher level immunity than previous one.
Like, I started with the AZ and then I got a Pfizer in June. And so I kind of snuck a third one. I got in a Pfizer in September as well. And I kind of feel bad that I have 2.6 or whatever, if you want to call it that, shots at this point. But the opportunity was made available and I wasn't going to be like, no, I don't want to be extra protected. And everybody was, even whether they were right or wrong, they were kept saying that my Pfizer AstraZeneca combo was shit. So I didn't want to mess with that. So now I got an AstraZeneca and a Pfizer squared, and I figure, like, I'm super vaccinated.
Yeah, that's quite a good, that's a very good combo.
You're not immortal.
I mean, I'll take them all. I just feel bad that there's so many people out there that aren't getting them. But I also ran a story in today's newspaper that Canada has thrown out an estimated 1 million doses along the way here.
Why didn't they give them the COVAX? Was it because they expired?
Yeah, I think that just because you have a system that comes, you know, the procured by the feds, distributed among all the provinces and then rolled out by the provinces, I think you can't really control as a federal government necessarily what happens to every single one of those doses. And right. Just over the course of time, naturally, not naturally is bad, but I mean, it's obviously a million doses wasted is bad, but it just happened that way. I just think it's, yeah, anyway.
And it's like when you have the vial already open and let's say there are 6 doses there, and you are a small pharmacy and you vaccinate just 3 people this day at a certain day, then you have throw out the rest of the vial because
For sure.
Pfizer, right? From opening, you have to use it in 6 hours or something.
And there's six doses in some of those vials or something, right? They doubled it on.
So sometimes pharmacists actually were saying, like, whoever was it, hey, do you want a shot? And
right.
Instead of wasting it. But you don't always have these people hanging around that you could
give. Who wants it? Well, they were doing that at the grocery stores for a while. Like, they'd announce, be like, we got a sale on lemons over in produce. And if you want a shot of COVID vaccine, come on over to the pharmacy. I want to ask you, I saw another story a few weeks ago, or a week ago, maybe. My time is irrelevant anyway. But it said that it was a Saskatchewan. Some experts were saying that a fifth wave in Saskatchewan could be the worst wave yet. And their trajectory is just sort of delayed based on what ours is, right? Like, they had their fourth wave spike later than ours. They're coming down off their fourth wave spike earlier. This modeling for a fifth wave that they're talking about could be the worst. I guess I have a two-part question. One, do you know what the modeling is suggesting for Alberta? And two, why would a fifth wave be the worst wave yet if we've got 7 out of 10 people vaccinated children coming in? Like, shouldn't the waves at least stop being so shitty? Like, why would they be predicting the worst one yet?
Well, it's a tough question. So I did a kind of a very, very broad brush strokes modeling for Alberta, basically seeing what is happening in Europe. And assuming that, okay, if we would drop some measures and get worse weather now, then like at the end of November, and got onto a trajectory that was early on in Denmark, then we can see our 1,000 to 2,000 cases at the end of February. If we get immediately on a trajectory that was in Austria, so like doubling every 14 days, then it will be earlier. But it's not like super duper modeling. It's just like really broad brush strokes prediction. So yeah, if we go very fast up and very many people got infected, then many people will end up in hospitals and in ICUs, and many will die. And what we see in Europe is that, you remember this nonsense going on in early summer about decoupling? So it was some kind of a gossip that I think some public health people were telling each other and not looking at graphs, really. Because, so UK was saying, oh, we are decoupling. And it's just because you have always the shift between cases and hospitalizations. So when cases went up, just started going up in UK, the hospitalizations that hit the bottom. But then they started to go up again. And before we opened for summer in Alberta on July 1st, already since end of May to July 1st, hospitalizations were going up in UK too. So they were not decoupled at all. Yet people here were talking about decoupling, and because there is decoupling in UK, then there will be decoupling here. So we will be fine and we will have endemic, right? Like mild endemic, like flu. And now one can see, and again, so we had the story of that we are now transitioning to this mild endemic in Alberta, that the virus, people will get infected, but it won't harm people. And there was all this fairy tale going on. But now there is another from international press. I see this article talking exactly the same story as Dina Hinshaw was telling us in summer. Again, about endemic, that it will be mild and so on.
You mean that thing that she said at the early summer, that at the end of summer, she legitimately admitted was a complete failure?
Yeah, this one.
Whoops.
Anyway. I mean, how many hundred people died?
You know what? No one's perfect. Sometimes you make mistakes and it leads to, overflowing ICUs. I mean, haven't we all done that?
15,000... surgeries postponed. Yeah, just
who hasn't put their entire community at risk? Yeah, you know, who among us?
Laughing it off in the style, like if I would, I don't know, make a mistake in laboratory and killed some cells on petri dishes, that now I have to spend 1 week recovering from this, or $1,000 ordering new cells.
Right.
Like, no, okay. I don't want to go there.
No, it's okay. I just like, I mean, the fourth wave that happened that we said like was gonna, this was what we talked about in May, like opening everything with like, we were going to be screwed. And we did, we had 20, the last time you came on this show.
Many people saying it in May and June that it's dangerous. So my models showed it. Models of people from British Columbia showed that. And just intuitively, many doctors would say like, hey, it's not good. And yet every one of us was called a fearmonger then.
Well,
I mean, the propaganda was super strong.
The
right?
pandemic's like, over, get over it. Remember that?
Yeah, pandemic is over, accept it.
Accept that, right. Listen, when you were on the show the last, Medicine Hat was at 22 deaths in a year and 3 months. Today on this show, Medicine Hat is at 78. Now, those 56 people that died in the last 4 months compared to, or 5 months compared to the, you know, 15 months before it, died because of these decisions. This is what I, you know, this is where we're at. But that's got to be, I mean, that I don't want to give anything away about our decision making at the newspaper, but I can't imagine the fourth wave in Medicine Hat won't end up being the news story of the year. It's the most fatal time in the city's history, bar none. I don't even know what I'm asking about that, other than the fact that people will think that that will be the worst it's ever going to be. I mean, I guess like, should we be prepared for this to go down again like that?
I think we should do everything to prevent it, really. I don't want another wave. I don't want this to continue. I don't want another wave, and we don't have to have another wave. But we have to accept, like what you said at the beginning of the show, we just have to accept reality and act accordingly.
Yeah. And that's
so coming back to this, like endemic and decoupling, what is now seen in Europe. So some international press was saying, it's just like article from 3 weeks ago saying like, oh, you look, and it will be endemic. It is already endemic. And they define endemic as a mild continuous spread that doesn't cause much suffering, right? And it's totally not what endemic is, but that's what they keep under this word, some sort of.
Right.
And again, about this decoupling, that okay, there will be infections, but they won't be harmful. Look at the Portugal. And well, 3 weeks ago, it was too early to look at the Portugal about it. So Portugal is 88% double vaccinated, double vaccination of total population, 88%. So one of the highest.
Much better than us.
Yes, and one of the highest in the world. Yet the cases are going up, and the hospitalizations are going up now too. And
did they lift all their other restrictions?
I think except of mask mandates, but I don't know what quality masks they are wearing and if everywhere. But yet now the growth in cases is, the rate of growth is similar like in Denmark or in Austria.
Is it showing of those spikes though? Is it still at least most of the cases are in that unvaccinated 12%?
That I don't know.
Because this is another place where the argument, people use the same statistics to make opposite arguments, right? And it's like, just like we were talking about before with masks, people will hear like, well, if I don't have an N95, I might as well wear nothing kind of thing. For the people that are like, well, vaccines, like if we get to 90% of the population vaccinated and we still have spikes of those people vaccinated, some people are going to see that and be like, why are we doing any of this? Like, why then? What does it matter? We can't stop it. So fuck it. Like, I just know that I know who I live around, right?
I know it's like, okay, without vaccines, it would be much, 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 much worse.
Right.
And most of the people that would get infected then, if you are not vaccinated, your outcomes are much worse than when you're vaccinated. So yeah, there could be breakthrough infections, but imagine how bad you would be if you would be not vaccinated, because vaccines to a certain level protect you and protect you from infection as well. So in many cases, I've probably been exposed already and I didn't get the virus. If I wouldn't be vaccinated, I would get the virus. So
yeah, I believe that too. I mean, at this point,
It's also like argument about masks, like masks don't protect you fully, but it's better to have the mask and have just 5% chance of getting the virus than to have 100% chance of getting the virus in high exposition.
Right. I mean, this
I don't know
thing,
how
right?
to argument against this Brezel thinking. It's just...
I wanted to ask about COVID zero, which of course you've been a steadfast proponent of. I think a lot of people have just sort of, as the pandemic wears on, have just sort of given up on it, you know, saying it's not going to happen. You know, it's something that needs to be done globally. Otherwise, you know, it's not going to work unless we keep our borders shut forever. How do you remain, maybe optimistic isn't the right word, but
steadfast.
Yeah, exactly. Or hopeful that this is something that can still be done.
Well, first of all, I don't want to accept the living with COVID because I think it's horrible. So now we see this, that COVID attacks more people who are unvaccinated, but it also attacks people because of high level of transmission in the community. It also attacks people who are vaccinated and for whatever reasons their immunity waned. And we will always have people for whom the immunity will wane or at some point will be less strong. And it can be any of us. So now when we are youngish, we can, like we are double or triple vaxxed, freshly triple vaxxed, then we are still protected. But imagine that suddenly you have cancer and you have to be on some immunosuppressants, and you're totally naked to the virus. And at the same time, society decides that, oh, we are living with it. So everybody has this personal protection, but they let the virus spread, and you are naked and you are hit with this. So this thing that we will always have some groups that won't be protected, and by letting the virus spread, they will be in danger. So I just don't want to accept this. And about being steadfast and being optimistic, the evidence is there. Like China is at elimination strategy and is successful with it. Taiwan is at elimination strategy and is successful with it. The same Hong Kong. Like wherever, whichever, and Prince Edward Island, Newfoundland and Labrador. All of those jurisdictions like China, Taiwan, they have less than one person, one case per million people. And they continue like that. Sometimes they have spikes, but then they quench it. And then again, they are at a low level. And China, I don't know, what is the population of China? 1.45
billion? Yeah. And they obviously contact trace much better than we do, right? Because like, I think like if we would have actually just traced properly from the beginning, we might have had a chance to be able to go to where there are spikes and do the proper thing. But we gave that up a long time ago. Christ, it was Dr. Vipon that was on the show when I was reading about how they were going to just stop testing for which they wasn't even going to test each strain for variant. It was just like, some of you are going to, well, if you die, we'll find out what you had, but like, we're not going to test everything to see if it's this. And we're certainly not going to test where you got it from 100% of the time. And you can't snuff anything out if you have no goddamn idea where it's coming from.
Yeah. And it's so much easier to, when you are at low spread level, at low numbers, then your testing and tracing can be super efficient.
Right.
You can really find everything. But if you are at 300, 400 cases per day, then, well, you just cannot trace, and you cannot trace the cases, because you would need like super huge army of contact tracers. Like, and also, like, why is it possible? Like, we can, so first of all, there are jurisdictions who stick to elimination strategy, and even with Delta, they are successful with it. There are jurisdictions who abandon the strategy, like New Zealand. So they are not anymore going like as fast as possible to zero. And it's totally a decision. It is a political decision. It's not that they failed in a way that, oh, the virus totally crashed them. They, in some moment, they decided, no, we are modifying now our strategy and we are not doing this anymore. And yeah, their cases are going up. But it's like, if I would decide I'm not cleaning my kitchen anymore, and oh my God, it's not possible to clean my kitchen because I decided so. So it's not a proof that the strategy doesn't work. If you don't use given strategy, then it cannot work because you are not using it. That's simple.
Like, well, I think it was a failure in New Zealand, but it was a failure of will, right? It wasn't, yeah. It wasn't the policy that failed. It's just that they gave up on it. And I mean, I think that's a really difficult thing. We live in these modern economies that are intertwined with other countries, and people want to travel and they want life to get back to, you know, some semblance of normalcy. And I can't help but like sympathize with that, because I want things to go back to the way they were, although they're never going back to the way they were. But some,
well, you want to be able to go and do shit because you decided you wanted to do it. Like, everybody's this, you're not, like, this is like, it's, you don't have to feel guilty about sympathizing with that. It's hard. This is hard, especially when you let something go for 2 years like this or whatever we're at. I can't even add the months anymore. I'm sure it's 20 months, I think, since original lockdowns in Canada, but lockdowns, restrictions. Sorry.
Yeah, it's 20 months.
But like, that's the, of course, this is like, ugh, for everybody, it's so dragged out, right? You're tired of it. You want to just do things with your families and your friends and your whatever. So, I mean, I get it.
Yeah, that's why it would be great if all public health would focus on transmission and on reducing transmission and not just outcomes and caring only about hospitals not being overwhelmed. Because when you address transmission, then everything goes down. Like, if you have no transmission, there is no severe outcomes and there is no postponed surgeries and so on. So if we would focus on transmission, we could now, like, we went down with really super weak measures. So probably now we are in the best situation ever to stop community transmission or keep it super, super low. And
I think it's important that you mentioned that in May. I want to say that too. You said that in May. Like, we wouldn't need crazy measures. You made a point of it. Like, it wasn't going to take humongous lockdowns. It was just going to take some mild, minor measures, which we did. And and that should be good news for people to know that, like, no, it never has to be a complete lockdown. You just have to pay attention to the number, right? Keep that R value, do whatever it takes. And there's different things that are at play, whether it's the season and yada, yada, yada. But I don't think if anybody says that the restrictions of that got us out of the fourth wave were a big deal, like I got new, like they were nothing, right? Put your mask back on and get your goddamn shot. That was literally it.
Yeah, and the reductions on gatherings, because right. You know, during the summer that like large gatherings were allowed, which was like you could have weddings or funerals of several hundred people attending, which of course, like without mask mandate at the same time, they're perfect super spreading events. So stopping this is a big, yeah. And now we can, like, okay, when kids are the driver of the spread, this 5 to 11 years old, when they will be vaccinated. So like if we start vaccinating them next week, so you give 2 weeks for at least first shot starting to work. So in 3 weeks from now, we could have a lot of extra population being quite resistant to COVID and stopping and slowing down the spread. And in just like, is it 4 weeks from now, there will be some the winter holidays. So in-person schools will be closed. So we don't even need forcefully close in-person schools, but take advantage of this seasonal closure, and then the spread will go down as well. So really we have these things that can bring our value lower. And if we would focus on stopping community transmission, then we could do it. And like having COVID zero all over the world or elimination strategy, it can start from, it would be the best if WHO would say, hey, we are going for elimination. And then every country would do everything they can to eliminate. Like, so to use really effectively the tools they have, because now we are using it just half-hearted. Like you just use one thing, like we use vaccines, but we don't use masks. And then when cases go up, we start using masks and so on. So it's like this patchy non-effective strategies, instead of putting everything at the same time on the fire and quenching it, we are just putting one bucket here, then a week later, another bucket and so on. And it never goes down because of that. So the best would be everybody together getting rid of COVID. But I don't think WHO would say something like this. They didn't act on airborne transmission, saying clearly 18 months ago that COVID is airborne. So I don't think that they will say now, yeah, elimination is the best strategy. Everybody, let's everybody do it. But it can go like a domino effect. So it's what Atlantic Canada did. Right, like they all together went, each province separately went for elimination, and then they, once they eliminated on their own territory, they opened the travel bubble between themselves. So you know, if they could do it, and it was a perfect case study of how elimination can work. So now if Canada would decide to go for elimination, have some restrictions about traveling, so quarantine, mask mandate, rapid tests and vaccination passports. Maybe even like super strong quarantine is maybe not necessary. Maybe combination of being freshly vaxxed and having a rapid test every day would cut it. And then once Canada would eliminate, and for example, I don't know, Germany, then we could travel between each other without restrictions.
I mean, I think that this particular episode with you on was much less doom and gloom than the last time we had you on. And I'm
feeling a lot better.
Yeah. And honestly, we're not sitting here telling people that this is just going to go away like a yeehaw. We're telling you that there's a lot still to be concerned about, and there's a lot of work left to do. But I think if you read with the glass half full kind of attitude here, we are close to being able to get this done if we actually do something with some diligence. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Yeah, maybe just one last question. In your view, are we in a better position now than we were last time we spoke?
I think
with the increase of vaccination and, you know, I guess increasing consciousness of how COVID spreads.
Yes, we are in a better position in terms of increased consciousness, definitely, and increased consciousness about what vaccines can and cannot do, and increased consciousness about airborne transmission and how to protect ourselves against airborne transmission, and probably also with less denial of COVID. So I think we have better grasp of reality right now. So there is hope. There's higher hope here.
I agree with that. Is there a goddamn but?
Although in practical terms, last time we've been in a better position to tackle it, but in mental, we've been in worse mental state about it.
Right.
So now consciously we are better prepared to fight COVID, I think.
I'll take it. I mean, I like, we're all looking for something to, like, I'm glad you brought some hope to the show today, because you, we need that sometimes. Right. And like, I don't know. I've been sitting around a little bit worried about this little plateau we're on coming down, and people are kind of starting to forget about it again. And certainly I was waiting for Kenny to show up any day now to be like, we're reopening it all. Not that there's anything to reopen, but
I don't think he can afford to take that gamble again politically.
His 20% approval rating might go down. then what would he do?
I mean, he may get turfed. Well, he may get turfed anyways. I wouldn't get my hopes up for that, but.
Absolutely. Is there any last thoughts for anybody? I'm just trying to picture Mo's. I'm trying to give Mo, who's not here today, but still is our editor, I'm trying to make sure he doesn't have too long of an afternoon here. But any last questions, Jerome, before we let her escape?
No, that was my last question. I figured we'd end on a somewhat not happy note, but optimistic.
There's no way she's got something else to say. I can see it in her eyes. Like, we're gonna
get, it's like, should I tell them? No,
hold that thought on whether this is gonna be an optimistic note or not. But Miss Dr. Gasparovitz, please take the last word of the show today.
No, so we have tools to protect ourselves, and we should use them, and use them systemically, of course, by the province, but by mandates of different things and policies, but we can use them by ourselves in families. So to make our holidays safer, we can, first of all, anybody who can get third shot should get the third shot. We should vaccinate kids as soon as possible. We should use the, to make ourselves safe, use the, imagine the virus that it spreads like a cigarette smoke. And once you visualize it and visualize how to get rid of the cigarette smoke, you are much safer. So the good thing would be to buy a CO2 monitor to take with you to every space. And then when the reading of it can tell you if the ventilation is good or not. If ventilation is bad, then open the window or leave the room. And air filtration. So even if you make gathering with your family, put air filtration units, like air purifiers going on, and open the windows. So all this can help. The as strongest mask as possible in public spaces can help. And also rapid tests. So a lot of my friends are saying now that before they will meet with their extended family, they will all test themselves with rapid tests every day to catch if somebody is asymptomatic but has COVID, then they know, okay, then this person will isolate and not go to the party. So they are really practical this way.
Do your part. Do everything you can in your power. Not everyone's going to have same access to all the things you can do. And like I said, give yourself the layers of protection that you're able to. The vaccines are free, so go get them. You can get free masks that are at least better protection than nothing. So again, no matter where your financial state is or where you are, there are ways to give yourself as much protection as possible. And, do what's available to you. If you can do all of the things that she's speaking of, please do that. If you can do some, please do those too. Staying on top of this is gonna be our only way out. And I want to thank Dr. Gasparovitz for coming on the show again. And I hate a world that COVID keeps existing, but I kind of like a world where you come hang out with us every 3 or 4 months. So I look forward to the next time we get to chat. Maybe that is to say, like, hey, look what we did. We got to COVID zero and we can celebrate. But thank you so much for giving us time as usual.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Yeah, always good to hear from you, Gosha.
Appreciate it. It is that time in the show where we thank those of our patrons who go way above and beyond anything we could ever hope for. To the Big Red Machine, to Dave Bonmiller, to Chris Sturwell, to Nicola DiNicola, and to Darius Beauregard. Thank you guys for everything you do. To our other patrons and listeners, we really appreciate you guys being here. We will be back next week for another uplifting show of The Forgotten Corner. Take care, you guys. Peace out.
Bye-bye.